From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 527, Least Privilege Using Group Policy, with guest Jeremy Moskowitz. Recorded Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorite guests today is Jeremy Moskowitz, who is a group policy MVP and runs Moskowitz, Inc., a company specializing in Microsoft consulting and education. Since becoming one of the first MCSEs in Windows NT and Windows 2000, Jeremy has performed Active Directory, group policy, and Windows management planning and implementation for some of the world's largest organizations. And he also makes a very cool product called Policy Pack, which is now a sponsor of Run As Radio. So I guess I have to start being nice to you.
It never hurts to be nice to the sponsors. I mean, look, if you have a choice, you could either you know, snub a sponsor, or you could be nice. Nice is better.
Well, I'll tell you what I've done for you, Jeremy. You are my guest for my 10th anniversary show.
Oh.
Very first show of Run As Radio that was ever published was on April 11th, 2007. This show is publishing April 12th, 2017. So 10 years later, thank you for coming on.
I love it. I've been on several times. Every time is more enjoyable than the next. We're gonna blow the doors off this time.
Got a little bit of housekeeping for the top of the show today. I am doing a survey all about what you like about Run As Radio, what you'd like to see more on, and to encourage you to fill in the survey, I'm giving away some Run As Radio mugs.
I have one.
You do? I do send them to my guests as well. How's your mug working out?
I love it. Okay, here's the secret. I don't know why, but every time I use my Run As Radio mug, which is, you know, it's in the rotation.
Yep.
I don't know why. I can't explain it. My coffee tastes better. I can't explain it.
That's awesome.
That's the deal. So I'm very mug appreciative.
There you
Everybody
go.
Everybody should get this mug.
Well, random selection from our previous survey fills in the folks that have filled it in. Rich Caleb, thank you so much for filling in our survey. And I'd like to send a Run As Radio mug to you. So I'll be reaching you through email. So there goes another mug. And if you'd like a mug, drop onto the website there and click on the Take the Survey button and give us your insights on what you like about Run As Radio. And maybe we'll send you a mug.
Get one. You will not be sorry.
Well, we always tend to talk about group policy, and because that's obviously your specialty. You've written the books. You're the MVP, although I think the MVP titles have changed now, haven't they?
They've changed, but you know what? You can still put it in parentheses and nobody seems to care.
No.
So,
And I'm sure those are the folks at Microsoft you talk to on a regular basis because you do care an awful lot about the problem.
You know, I think the thing about group policy, and we talked about this the last time we were together, is that group policy, A, isn't dead, and B, isn't going away. And C, if I did a huge survey of a bunch of our customers and just people at large, when you ask them, are you using group policy less, about equal, or more than, say, 2 years ago?
Right.
Almost everybody says more than.
More.
In other words, I don't encounter organizations that say, we're gonna decommission our on-prem DCs and walk away.
Now, I think it comes in two categories. It's and no, we need to be using it more.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so with that, group policy still has, you know, this sort of mysterious air that doesn't have to be too mysterious, but that's why we've got the training stuff. And it also has a lot of amazing things you could do in the box. I call them 39 categories of magic.
Nice.
But it also can't do everything, which is why I've got some ways to goose it where it needs to be goosed and be improved. So, you know, group policy is amazing, but also, and been around a long time. I think a lot of people still find themselves sometimes feeling they've got a good handle on it, and other times just throwing their hands up in the air and going, I don't know why it's not working.
Sometimes we just have to blame Active Directory for all of our problems.
Well, you can. It's like blame it on the rain.
Easy. I'm really fascinated with this idea of talking about group policy as a way to deal with least privilege, because we've done a few shows now on like just enough administration. And just, it seems today like our danger vector now is the administrators, that for the most part, we've locked our users down pretty well, and they rarely do much damage to the system. But one misclick in your super user account can really ruin your month, even be a career limiting event.
Yeah. And it actually turns out that there's a couple of exploits around that. In fact, we can go back a couple of months. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with what happened around June of last year. Lots and lots of people got caught off guard by a patch that Microsoft instituted. It's got a fancy name, MS-16072.
Nice.
And it actually wasn't a group policy patch. It just kind of affected group policy in a way that people hadn't considered when the Microsoft folks were developing it. Just to warm everybody up, what happened was that it was an SMB problem, right? It was who's doing the talking, who's downloading the stuff.
Right.
And the way group policy used to work before this patch was when your computer started up in the morning, it would say, where am I and what GPOs am I supposed to get? And the computer would download that stuff. And then when the user logs on, the user would do the same thing. Where am I? What GPOs am I supposed to get and download that stuff?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, when MS-072 gets deployed to your endpoints, which can happen on Windows 7, 8, and 10, when you've got that patch out there, the physics change. So when the computer starts up in the morning, it downloads all of its computer side stuff and everything is great. But when the user logs on, instead of the user doing the downloading, that's changed. The physics are no longer that. What happens is that the computer, on behalf of the user, will then download the user's group policy objects. And when this patch came out, if anybody had any GPOs that had security filtering set in a way where you only had a single user or a group of users, well, the computer wasn't listed on that list anymore. And therefore, the computer couldn't do the work on the user's behalf, and group policy objects that were configured that way would catch fire and they wouldn't work anymore or would revert back.
Awesome. And when you say catch fire, you just mean they weren't applied?
Yeah. Well, what would happen is that they would typically, what's considered, fall out of scope.
Right.
So if you had something like kill the control panel for the entire sales team, well, that GPO could no longer be processed. And those settings, if they were admin template settings, would revert back.
Right.
And therefore, your sales team now has access to the control panel. So people were seeing the result of what they felt was like a certain group policy object failing or not applying, when really it was doing exactly what it was supposed to do.
Right. Didn't have the rights to apply it, so it didn't apply it.
Yep, exactly. So getting around this is, you know, some people have actually gotten around it correctly, which is good because it's been a problem for a while that's now well known. But in case you haven't, maybe we should kind of talk through.
Sure. No, this sounds pretty serious because it did fail silently. If you don't notice something like the salespeople now have a control panel because they never told you, you've never looked, you could have this problem right now and not have a clue.
Yeah. And that's the whole point, going back to the idea of group policy and least privilege.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, this patch made the processing of group policy, the processing itself, least privilege.
Right. That's what they were doing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So in order to get to make it work, you have to think, well, what does least privilege mean? What does that mean? It means the least amount of things in order to make the damn thing work.
Right.
Like that's my cocktail party definition of what least privilege means. The least amount of access rights, comma, in order to make the damn thing work. So in order to make group policy process in these circumstances, you could add a computer to that GPO with read access. And when you do that, aha, then the physics all work. The computer wakes up in the morning, downloads its own computer side stuff, then the user logs on, and the computer with the read access will then do the work on behalf of the user and download the user side stuff. So it's a simple fix, but there's a couple of extra moving parts to this. The problem is, of course, you have, I don't know, 300 GPOs. How do you touch all of them? Well,
right.
There's a PowerShell way to do that. And then there's sort of an ongoing problem also, which is like, what about brand new group policy objects?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the stamp on it. And if people are curious about how to do this, on my blog at gpanswers.com, we'll have a link in the show notes where it's called Never a Dull Moment, how to fix, you know, what went wrong with group policy. And it goes into excruciating detail how to do this yourself.
But this sounds like Microsoft basically forcing us down the least privileged path in the context of GPOs.
That's it. It's exactly right. It somebody figured out a way to be naughty with it. They I don't know exactly what they did or what they discovered, but the result was that Microsoft said, fine, let's least privilege the discussion about the download of the GPOs. Let the computer do the computer side stuff. Let the computer do the user side stuff, but then process the user side stuff in the user's context.
And while I'm not wildly happy that they quietly broke things, I appreciate that at least they're, you know, obeying their own suggestions that they to, you know, we want you to use least privilege. Here you go. You know, our stuff does least privilege too. It's, I think it's been one of the fundamental hypocrisies we've seen so often is they're always asking us to use less than a super admin account. And then whenever they do something, you're using a super admin account.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you can reduce, you know, running with the scissors, I like to call it,
right,
the better off you're going to be after all.
And while I'm not the first person in the world to advocate on Linux, Linux does a good job of this. Sudo is awesome. The fact that you can't live in an admin account, you have to elevate, do your thing, and then you de-elevate.
Yeah, and Windows doesn't do that.
No.
It doesn't have that as a thing. And so one of the things that, you know, since Windows can't do that natively, that is one of the things that PolicyPack can do,
right,
with our PolicyPack Least Privilege Manager product. So the idea is you want to get out of the my users are running with the scissors all the time problem.
Mm-hmm.
You can remove local user admin rights. And now everybody's running with standard users. But okay, wait, hold on. Now you have a different problem. They can't run that, you know, old and crusty application from 1999. They can't get into Device Manager and they can't install their own iTunes.
Right.
Because they're standard users. What are you going to do? Well, with PolicyPack Least Privilege Manager, you can elevate just the right things at the right time, working around and bypassing UAC prompts to enable standard users to do the admin-like thing at the right time.
That makes sense. And I'm glad you're just fixing it, because it you know, I want to say it should just be built in, but you know, what can you do?
Some applications are great. They used to only run with admin rights and they've been rewritten to run with standard user rights. That's great. That's the best way you can, if you can do it that way.
Right.
But there's always going to be things that you can't install unless you're an admin. Again, you can't get into Device Manager and poke around there fully unless you're a local admin. So you're going to need something to work around the problem set of, fine, we've taken the scissors away, but you can check the scissors out when you need to and check them back in.
Check them back in. Because the local administrator password problem is not a small problem, right? Like just admin, you need to occasionally have administration rights on the machine, but you don't want all the passwords to be the same either.
Well, yeah, you're right. You don't want to give users something that they know that they can spill to somebody else,
right?
That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And then the second, almost, I don't know, maybe even worse problem is what I see a lot is folks who say, you know what I'll do? I'll just use my ghost factory and I'll make the password battleship and it'll just be the same password everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not good either, because if I'm on the, I'm going to just pick on the cleaning staff at some company somewhere that's really the bad guys, and I boot with some, you know, Linux-y boot disk on a USB stick when nobody's looking, I can hack at that SAM database internally, grab out Battleship, and guess what? I had that password and this password. It's all the same password on everybody's flipping machine.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So that's equally bad. So, but good news? Microsoft has a free solution out of that problem.
Oh, what is this?
It is called LAPS, Local Admin Password Solution. It gets us out of the sticky problem of, well, it doesn't help you out of the problem of giving somebody a local admin password, like, you know, it doesn't elevate or do anything like that we just talked about.
Right.
But what it can do is it can dictate a random password across everybody's workstation and store it in a central database.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
And hopefully store it securely.
You know what that central database is called? You're not going to believe it. It's going to blow your mind.
Active Directory.
You got it.
Oh, my God. I'm so clever.
I know. It's amazing. So there's no SQL to stand up, no databases, no SA accounts. You don't have to know anything. It's great. And what's what my favorite part about LAPS is that, wait, hold on a second. I'm having a moment. It's hooks and built right upon the God-given principles of group policy. Let me explain. There's exactly two things you have to install. On every endpoint, you install what's called a client-side extension. Now, you already have client-side extensions. Microsoft ships 39 of them in the box. This becomes the 40th.
Right.
Okay. And PolicyPack, by way of example, becomes the 41st and so on. There are other third-party tools that hook into group policy. This is how Microsoft designed it. If you want to do more with group policy, you install a client-side extension, and Microsoft ships this one as a kind of a third-party add-on, if that makes any sense. They just don't ship it in the box.
Nice.
So you put this little moving part on the endpoint, and then, hold on a second, on your machine, you put the management pieces, which enables you to, you know, set the characteristics of how this thing's going to operate. And then once it's all configured, which there's some PowerShell, you know, jiggery pokery, you stand on your head, and by the time it's over, you've configured Active Directory to input and take the password changes from all of the computers in the domain. They just all go right into one place. They're all right there for you to use, but there's, hold on a second, there's a catch that might, you might think, how can we live past this? All those passwords are going to be clear text.
Hmm. That's not good.
That sounds terrible, right?
Yeah.
But on the plus side, though, that stuff is all kind of protected with ACL. So like you could set like password readers group, right? And if Richard's in the password readers group, but Jeremy is not in the password readers group, Richard can read the passwords and I can't read the passwords.
Right. But the point here is you want to be able to read the passwords so that you can pass them along.
Yeah.
But I also like the idea that they constantly change.
I mean, sometimes you need to get into that machine to like, you know, till the soil, clean out the temp directory, something that an administrator can only do themselves for whatever reason. You got to look it up in a database somewhere, but you don't want it, you know, you don't want it taped under everybody's keyboard, of course. And you also don't want it in some place that isn't very secure. But having it in Active Directory underneath ACLs and saying only the password readers people can get to it, actually, it's a pretty nifty idea. And Microsoft supports this tool. In other words, this is a thing that Microsoft wants you to use, and I fully endorse it. It's great.
Really interesting. And yeah, we can debate whether they should have encrypted that or, you know, what other protections to put on it. But it is an interesting idea that obviously is going to continue to evolve. Can give me 1 second here to pay the bills, Jeremy, because this episode of Run As is brought to you by IT Edge Intersection. IT is transforming, and the techniques and tools you've used for the past decade or more are less relevant. It's all changing. Cloud services are a reality, automation is penetrating all aspects of operations, and software is being delivered faster than ever. It's no longer a safe bet to just sit and do what you've been doing, but there's no reason to panic. The experts at IT Edge Intersection are here to help you understand how to use these new technologies, new approaches, and new techniques, all with a real-world focus that acknowledges the realities that you deal with every day. Make your job easier and up your value to your organization by attending IT Edge Intersection in Orlando, May 21st to 24th. Use the code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration at itedgeintersection.com, and I'll see you there. All right, let's keep moving along. I mean, obviously, the change that MS-072 applied restricted the machine's ability to grab GPOs, but in general, that seems like an exploit channel. So how do you lock that down for your administrators as well? Are there specific rights you have to have?
Yeah, I think, you know, a way to think about it is, again, from a least privileged perspective, is what can we do so that the bad guys can't get a toehold in, right? Like, and if we think about it, in fact, if we look at some recent stuff that's happened, there's actually, and I don't want to scare the pants off of people too much, but I've seen the rumblings of malware that if an administrator is running with the scissors, then and they click on the malware or do whatever the naughty thing is, it will then use group policy as the attack vector.
Yeah. It seems like a vulnerability, right? Group policy is incredibly powerful. And if I'm a bad guy, the ability to push my software onto all these machines or to take control of a particular right that makes you blind to an exploit, that's really powerful stuff.
That's basically the gist, right? So like, again, admin's running with the scissors. He runs blowmeup.ps1. I'm just making it up, you know. And then what happens is that because he's running with the scissors and he's got the rights to do that thing, this malware is then going to look through the group policy list, figure out, well, gosh, you've got rights to, say, your default domain group policy object, and let's go ahead and go in there, and I don't know, I'll add everyone to the domain admins group. Right. I don't know if that's exactly what it does. I'm just using it as an example. Mm-hmm. And now, if I know any account, then I'm a domain admin. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? Or I'm a local admin, whatever, however it works. But that's the general gist. It then it's able to manipulate the GPO contents for its evil schemes.
Yeah, a really great way to elevate your privileges.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of just add everyone to domain admin, because then you don't know which account he exploited anyway.
Yeah, maybe I've said too much already and given the bad guys even more ideas. I hope not.
I never thought of that.
The point is that, you know, what you want to try to do is look for group policy objects that have the security stuff. And the right. security stuff would be things like group policy preferences, local users and groups, or group policy preferences, scheduled tasks, or restricted groups. Those are the kinds of things that actually have the most strength to be able to add and remove people from these important groups.
Sure.
And again, it comes down to if you're running with this, if you are a standard admin, you really should be separating your accounts with a regular account and an admin account that mm-hmm. you use only for the times you need it.
Right.
And, you know, editing and manipulating group policy is really no different.
And you made the point right off the bat when we're talking about 16.072 that the only privilege that the domain machine needs is the ability to read those GPOs.
Yeah.
You don't want machines with rights to write to them. There's no point.
No, not generally.
So the big thing here is chasing down who exactly has writing privileges. And I kind of like it not being a person, that it's an account that's specific to the job.
Yeah, it can be an particular account that's to the job, mm-hmm. or you can say like each person is audited, right? So it's like there's Fred and Fred GPO admin, there's right. Mary and Mary GPO admin,
right? Right?
So that way it's like who did what in group policy land? Aha, well, that was Mary GPO admin, and we know that because she created the GPO and it's marked with her stamp on it,
right.
and so on. In that way, having a real separation and not just like, well, we're all domain admins. That's great. You know, in fact, that actually brings me to another thing I hadn't thought about until mm-hmm. right now, is that if you have what I call shared domain admin access, like you and your four buddies are in the domain admins group,
right.
it's kind of an interesting scenario what happens. This is another interesting thing to think about with regards to least privilege. When one person creates a GPO, that other domain admin who's your buddy right next to you, he can edit that group policy object also and kind of undo your stuff. That's not good either. Like, you know, on the one hand, you could say, oh, that's good. If I go on vacation, then my friend can deal with that.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's not good because then you have really no, it's not a great tracking mechanism to kind of know who's doing what. Yeah. You should have better process around that.
Yeah, we really don't have a great logging mechanism to show, you know when a policy's been created, but you don't know the log of who edited it, when they edited like that. I don't know that you can discover all of that. Nope.
No, it's actually pretty poor. The only thing that you can do, there are third-party tools that will siphon the data off of a domain controller and then make sense of it and say, Mary on this domain controller did this and Fred on this domain controller did that, and sort of, you know, reconstruct what happened for you.
Yeah.
Those are third-party tools. But what you can do is you can put process in front of it. And Microsoft has a tool that does that. And there are other third-party tools that compete with the Microsoft version. The one that I know the best is Microsoft AGPM, or Advanced Group Policy Management. It's not an auditing tool. What it is, it's a check-in, check-out workflow system amongst administrators that has the sort of logging of what occurred when. So if Jeremy created the GPO and he checked it back in, and then Richard clicked edit on it, and then he made these changes, and then he came out, and then Fred did this and deployed it. Like, we know what happened. Like, we can whistle down the lane and see what happened. So from a least privileged perspective of who can do what in group policy land, that's another excellent, you know, putting on some armor between you and your colleagues to like say, well, I didn't do it. And here's where, look, you can see, here's who did it. And it wasn't me.
Right, right. And I kind of like that. It's almost like source control for group policy.
That's it. It's exactly right. It's just like back in the day, say source safe for group policy.
Right. Well, and you know, it'd be nice if group policy was just a file that you could check in and check out and apply. It's a little more complicated than that. It just wasn't designed this way.
It's not much more complicated than that. It really, thankfully, it's really not. You really can, in fact, check it out and check it back in. And the AGPM tool that Microsoft has does a great job with that. And again, mm-hmm. if enterprise customers are available to use that at any time. So if people don't know how to use it and want training on that, that's part of what my GP Answers training class can provide. But if you don't have enterprise license with Microsoft, there are at least three other third-party tools that compete with that. So if you like the idea of check-in, check-out workflow management, definitely recommend checking out the third-party tools that can handle that.
Yeah, for sure. And is one of those tools PolicyPack?
No. We don't. We're about managing the heck out of the endpoint, the check-in, check-out workflow stuff about the GPOs. Those tools are already done and are fantastic.
All right. So we're into this idea of not running with scissors all the time. We've certainly denied it to the users as much as possible. I like this option of the local administrator password solution, so you can elevate them when you need to and then change the password or move on so that it goes away. And I struggle with this path we seem to be on, where every administrator is going to have several accounts based on what particular roles they have. It's for better or worse, but is there any alternative?
If there is one, I don't have there's no silver bullet as far as I know. I think we all know Sammy Laiho. He's one of these fantastic speakers on the circuit.
And coming on the show in a couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah, he's great. He's one of my favorite people and one of my favorite presenters.
He's also amazingly good at scaring the snot out of
you. Yes. Yeah. Well, somebody's got to do it. It might as well be him. What I love about Sammy, I'm just going to tell one of his great jokes, is that now with Windows Hello, you can have those fingerprint scanners. Yep. And he says, you have your regular finger, and he shows his index finger, and he says, I also have my admin finger, and he sticks out his not index finger, if you catch my drift.
Right. I love it.
That's a great Sammy joke that it's fantastic.
Should we talk a little bit about AppLocker, Win10's device guard? Like, what is, these guys have a role in group policy and least privilege?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the idea is, look, everything you can do to make your endpoints more secure, you should do it. I mean, look, at some point there's a ludicrous amount. Like, you could just make it so that the damn thing's unusable.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense either. Or you could go flush the entire other direction and say, like, here's your laptop. Do with what you will. If it catches fire, you're on your own.
Yeah.
If you're going to manage it, though, right? Like, that's a choice, right? That's the first choice you have to make. Are you going to give people a device that is well managed or not managed or just barely managed? And you have to decide that. And I can't in good conscience say that there's enough tooling and, armor around these systems that are not managed at all. Like, there's a lot of organizations that purport to say, like, yep, we just let people go to Best Buy and buy a Windows PC or a Mac, and we just let them run free with it. If that's your MO, great. That's fine. But then there's going to be consequence for that.
Sure.
If you are going to manage, then you should be trying to do a reasonable amount to try to, shore up as much as you can. And so, you're right. One of the things that I like to think about right out of the gate is AppLocker. An AppLocker's job is to stop end users from running apps.
Right. Or installing their own anyway.
Yeah, from installing their own or from trying to run stuff that, they shouldn't have access to.
Right, that's not on the whitelist.
Well, that's the point.
Right.
That's sort of the problem with AppLocker. AppLocker is great. It really does work as advertised. And it's a huge step forward from what used to be back in the day of Windows XP software restriction policies.
Right.
I know. Can you believe I just mentioned the word XP on the show? 10-year anniversary show. I got to slide in the word XP
there. There you go.
Watch it. Be careful. I'll say Windows 2000 next. Just don't make me. I'll do it.
Remember when XP was Windows 2000 with the Fisher-Price interface?
I do remember that. That's right.
That's a Manasseh line. That's how long ago
correct.
That was. But yeah.
So back to AppLocker. So it was a great evolution from Windows XP software restriction policy. And what I like to tell people is that AppLocker really is software restriction policy 2.0. In fact, it's literally the same code. They just dolled up what's called the tooling around it. They made like the ability to create whitelists and blacklists a little bit smarter. It's great. However, let's exercise. Let's talk it all the way through. So let's say you turn AppLocker on and you do nothing at all. If you misconfigure AppLocker, I do a demo called the snake eating its own tail demo, where when you reboot Windows will eat itself.
Nice.
And die. So
probably not what you want.
No. Right. So if you just turn AppLocker on all by itself and misconfigure it, you will eat its own tail. So AppLocker's job in life, your job rather, is to feed AppLocker.
Mm-hmm.
What are you feeding it? Your job is feeding AppLocker rules to open the doggy door for things you want to run.
Right.
So what does that mean? It means, okay, great. So we have our list of 30 things that we know, or 300 things that we know, or 3,000 things that we know. And then, oh gosh, we've introduced the 31st or whatever. You've introduced a new thing. You have to train AppLocker to then say the configuration of this thing based on some characteristics is now it's okay to run. Because if I don't say it's okay to run, that means it's bad and it'll put the smackdown on it.
Right.
So that's sort of the problem. It's sort of you've got to feed the beast that is AppLogger.
Absolutely. It does take care of feeding. It doesn't require an enterprise edition too.
Absolutely. So, there, you know, I don't know what the makeup is of like the whole population that would listen to this podcast, but some percentage is going to be enterprise paying customers.
Yep.
And some percentage is going to be, you know, people who've got 50 to even 100, 10,000 seats or whatever and aren't enterprise customers.
Sure.
And AppLogger just isn't in the box.
Yeah. And there's no way to do that. Pro won't work.
No. Pro and AppLogger is not a thing.
Now, what about Device Guard? Do you like that better?
So that's a good question. It's not about better or worse. They do have different design goals out of the gate, and they may merge or become unified or try to have the same – who knows? As it sits right now, as I'm talking through what AppLogger does and what Device Guard does,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you my take on the two perfect scenarios for AppLogger and Device Guard. Will this change in the future? I don't know. This is just how it looks to me right now. AppLogger is, like I said, great for preventing end users from trying to be naughty and install and or run stuff.
Right.
Either, you know, okay.
Intentionally or unintentionally.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm.
Device Guard, on the other hand, is a little bit different and where it actually will stop admins from running stuff too. Now, mm-hmm. how is that possible? I hear you cry, right? Because admins can do everything.
Yeah, we're gods. Didn't you know?
Exactly. You have a local admin password. Can't you do whatever you want?
Yeah.
So the key thing about how Device Guard works is that Device Guard will scan your entire system for every damn thing that could possibly execute
mm-hmm.
and create sort of like a binary blobby list of everything that is on this machine right now. Well, then you digitally sign it, and you say, using group policy actually, point to this big blobby thing that I just digitally signed, and that gets sucked into the kernel of the machine and tattooed in its brain forever until you change it the next time
right.
from up upon high.
So that machine better have been a clean setup.
Exactly. Yeah, if you've got blowmeup.exe on that machine, you've said you're going to let it run. You've that's the deal.
Yeah.
So AppLocker's situation, I think today, as it sits today, AppLocker's great for like endpoints and Sally Secretary machines and, you know, some engineer somewhere. Whatever. It's great for office workers. But Device Guard, the way I see Device Guard today at least, is that it's great for like ATMs, cash machines, brain scan machines, shop floor machines, things where you want to make this machine where you put any damn thing on it that you did not want from the factory, more or less. That's it. You will not be able to run it because Device Guard will not allow it.
Right. And that's pretty strict, but certainly a more sophisticated tool all around. But, and I hate to just pony this one up for you, but this is where your Leaf's Privilege Manager comes into play, right?
Well, so I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. The check is in the mail, sir. Thank you very much for that. Fantastic. So here's the deal, right? So if AppLocker is great for stopping users from running apps, but you got to feed the beast by constantly feeding the whitelist for stuff that's new, or
yeah.
at least it's hard to triangulate a perfect whitelist to say when I install new stuff, then it's going to be okay. Like that's really hard.
Updated versions, all those sorts of things.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, Pauseback Least Privilege Manager does what we talked about earlier, which is if somebody is you've removed admin rights, but you need them to run with the scissors sometimes, you can elevate and bypass UAC prompts. That's the one thing it does.
Right.
But the other big thing that Pauseback Least Privilege Manager does is that it has a thing that's called Secure Run that has similar goals to AppLogger, but it's not using AppLogger. What it does is that with one click, it then starts figuring out, well, who owns the file? Okay, hold on. I'll walk you through this for a second.
Right.
So let's say you use SCCM or PDQ deploy, or you hand install the thing or as that system tool. Well, that system tool or that admin or that account is going to be owning that file. But when some user goes to the internet and downloads blowmeup.exe, here's the question.
Yeah.
Who owns that file?
I mean, at that particular moment, it's owned by the machine, right? Because you haven't even got full privileges to it yet.
It's the user. See, the user owns that.
Right.
When the user downloads that blowmeup.exe from Internet Explorer or Chrome or Firefox or whatever, they own it. And that's the thing. And Windows will let them naturally just run that application. And if that's a malware, if that's a portable app, if that's a good app, you don't know the difference. It'll
right.
just let it run, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Any standard user can just go to like portableapps.com and get the Solitaire app from there, even if the Solitaire is gone from the machine, right? That's the, everybody knows that. But see, you mistype and you go to plottableapps.com, I don't know, and you download some other app that isn't really Solitaire and instead is a malware thing, and it will run because the standard user has the rights to run it.
Yeah.
So what PolicyPack Secure Run does, it says, unless you're on the list, like the administrator or SCCM or the system, then you can't run it.
Right. That just stops it in its tracks.
That's it. It just stops it in its tracks. So with AppLocker, you have to feed the beast and say, well, this application, I want these rules. With this application, I want these rules. With PolicyPack Least Privilege Manager and Secure Run, you just turn it on and say, well, if it's installed by the system or me or SCCM, then it's good and should run.
Right.
If it was downloaded and trying to run by Adam in the mailroom, he's not on that list, so it doesn't run.
That's the end of that.
That's it.
Makes total sense, my friend.
Bringing you all the hits.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to see the product continue to evolve. It's an interesting way to take on this least privileged challenge all the way from the admins through the users. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And I've added all the links here. Go to gpanswers.com and Policy Pack. So if folks want to learn more. Anything else before we wrap it up?
Anything else? Well, I'm going to be, I'll be doing some conferences this year, some IT conferences. So you can look me up there. And of course, if folks are looking for, you know, hardcore, intensive group policy training and workshop classes, I'm available to come to you. And I'm super honored again to be part of your 10th anniversary show. Really, seriously, thank you so much for including me and always thinking about me.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you so much for being part of it. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.